We present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with an item from the classified section of the Western Morning News, read by Corey Caulfield.
Converted barn with two bedrooms to let for 6 months. No pets or children or DSS, but would accommodate a horse if required.
Thanks to Jim and Babs Jackson of Mavagissi for that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Tony Hawkes. And opposite them on my left, Jeremy Hardy and Alan Corran. Andy, which new leader wants to be mates with New Labour?
Is this Charles Kennedy?
It is.
Who this week made his first appearance as leader of the Lib Dems. And, of course, the big challenge for him is defining the party away from its rather cosy relationship with Labour. And I understand he was urged to go for clear orange water, which sounds more like a sample than a policy. I thought he showed great promise as a politician because he managed to get up and say absolutely nothing. So I think
it's training on the News Quiz.
I know.
He won't. Career's taken a bit of a downhill turn since then.
It's strange, isn't it, that people from the News Quiz are ending up running political organisations? Well, I am taking over as leader of the Shining Path in Peru now. He said an interesting thing. He said that we mustn't position ourselves to the left of Labour, but they might not have any choice in that, the way things are going. But he got a lot of stick for being jokey, but he's quite funny, isn't he? Well, he used to be on this. He was funny. Thinks up his own jokes, unlike Haig. The best one Haig did was that one, which must have been come up by a committee, when he said, "Well, I grew up in a town with ordinary people who worked for my dad. I tell you, there were people there who thought that conservatives were something you spread on your toast."
In his first speech as Lib Dem leader, Charles Kennedy told the conference that his party were nobody's poodle, but they weren't Rottweilers either, at which point Simon Hughes entered the room and made a great big mess on the carpet. 2 points to Andy. Tony, whose crusade got an extremely poor reception?
Would this be the Labour Party? Alistair Darling?
Yes.
It turns out the government's anti-poverty campaign is simpler than we thought. They're just going to stop describing people with no money as poor. apparently it's not that simple. I think he said something like, "Poverty is complex, it's not just a simple problem about money." I think he's got that wrong. Because people tend to want money in exchange for things, don't they? You can't give them old socks. Stuff like that. So really, that is the best way to measure it. But I think a DSS spokesman said something like, "You could say that students are poor, but they're not really, because when they graduate, they'll get jobs and then they'll get money." So what they're, you know, you could extrapolate this idea, in fact, and say that nobody is poor because everybody has the opportunity to get money. You know, the national lottery, you see. So nobody's poor because everyone could win the lottery tomorrow. It's as simple as that. That's their policy. I think it's moving the goalposts so they can get the, the figures down or as ever.
So they're going to redefine the poor as the not rich yet.
Exactly. I mean, it's positive thinking.
It is very positive. It's a challenge.
They're all potential drug dealers after all, aren't they?
Do you see Geoffrey Archer this week in an unguarded moment? Apparently said that after a night at the opera with Mary, he quite often sends Mary home in the car, and he goes and talks to the down-and-outs and gets their views, as if they aren't suffering enough. sleeping out on the streets in December, and some twat in a tuxedo comes up and says, "I've just been watching Aida."
Get me off the streets, I tell you.
And they say, "Not even for £2,000, Geoffrey."
Mm. 2 points to Tony. Jeremy, for which group of poor workers are the government about to dig deep?
The miners?
No.
So that dates me, doesn't it? carry on.
No. Do you want me to answer the question?
Answer the question, Minister.
Another group of deprived workers.
I didn't come here to be humiliated.
They think they know over there.
Yes. Well, we think, don't we? We think it's farmers.
You're right.
Yeah.
Farmers aren't poor. They get all that money. No, for they're going to get even, animals.
They're going to get even more. They're going to get £150 million from the government, I think.
For shooting their own animals. And yet being a hitman is illegal.
Well, their argument is that they've had a few poor years, not being able to sell any of their meat anywhere and that sort of thing. So
it's
they've got
they charge too much for it.
Yes. Well, I think it's partly because some of it's poisonous. But which can affect sales, you know. It's, although, of course, that's all gone. It's all sorted now.
Government introduced a package of agricultural reforms, including money for hill farmers and so on. Agriculture Minister Nick Brown announced help for abattoirs, subsidies for cattle and sheep farms, and a review of GM foods, though he stopped short of an amnesty for Tommy Archer. Alan, your music. Wake up, Maggie, I think I got something to say to you. Alan, whose thoughts on his predecessor turned into another major disaster?
You do miss them when they're gone. I don't know whether he actually said it, but apparently John Major thought Margaret Thatcher was mad and he wanted her done away with and all sorts of things that we did not think him capable of then. And we thought he was doing it really rather quietly and nefariously, the way Conservatives do go on. What he really wanted to do was kill her.
Should have paid a farmer. Strike a match nearer would probably do it.
Outrageous. Outrageous. Destroy. That's what you did to Mad Cow. Oh, yeah.
But why did he keep all this to himself? If he'd come out and said this in public, he'd never have lost the election, would he?
Yes, the diaries of one of John Major's closest advisers, Judith Chaplin, reveal that the former Chancellor thought Lady Thatcher was loopy and needed to be isolated and destroyed. The diaries do not deal with the famous Major outburst in which he claimed there were four bastards in his cabinet, a claim which shocked the nation because it proved once and for all that Mr. Major couldn't count. Scores at the end of round one are sensationally Alan and Jeremy 2, but Andy and Tony well in the lead with 6 points. Before we start round two, here's a clipping from The Independent.
A man is suing police in Connecticut after he was refused entry to the force because he was too clever. Norbert Jordan's IQ score of 125 was deemed too high for the police, who said that smart people get bored and leave.
Thanks to Richard Grove's Tame for that. Andy, who's about to benefit from Pay As You Learn?
Is this golden hellos for teachers?
Yes.
They're going to get increased pay according to pupil performance. Is that right?
Yes.
I think that gives an immense amount of power to the children. If the kids get wind of that, that their exam results decide how much their teacher gets paid. Can you imagine? Not that kids are crafty or anything like that. So I would have thought that sent a bit of a chill down the spine of most teachers.
They probably go into the toilets before the exam and write all the answers up on the walls, don't they? And then put out loads and loads of glasses of water on the table for the kid.
Teachers' unions may accept government plans to introduce performance-related pay. The Department of Education is offering an immediate pay rise of £2,000 and all the leather patches they can sew on. In a major compromise, schools will be allowed to set their own targets, and many have chosen David Blunkett as their first one. 2 points to Andy. Tony, who was hot flushed with success?
Hot flushed with success. Any ideas on this, Andy?
I know.
I think they know. I'll give them a chance. Since
No.
It's all right. You can relax now, Tony.
Okay.
You can have bits of aviary. No, that's beaky. No, that's bird.
Get up.
Ovary put in your Ethiopian tubes.
Oh, yes.
You can have bits of ovary put back in your body that are yours or somebody else's, and that means that you can still produce eggs if you are a woman.
Yes, I was going to say, I haven't got any.
Well, no. If you're a man, you can stave off the ageing effects by pushing your testicles up inside your body. And then you'll find that you're able to remember where your keys are. So long as you haven't pushed your keys up inside your body. But yeah, and it's a new fertility treatment and it's caused a lot of controversy, and it means that their regulatory body, the human embryo, what's it called, Ovtos, has to. has to swing into action.
Doesn't this raise the nightmare scenario of women being able to have babies when they're 78? Is that what I read was the sort of social implications you'll have?
Well, I thought you were thinking about an addition to Carol and Mark when you said that. You hit on 78, and I had this terrible tremor go through me. Thatcher with one in the oven. Like the devil's spawn. It'd be like Rosemary's Baby, wouldn't it? This thing is born with the glinting eyes. And I would like the thought of that. The man's from Leeds for an extra point. He's called, I think, Professor Godson. But he went to America to do it. Because women in Leeds won't have any truck with that kind of thing.
I've never really understood why that word men is in words like menopause and menstruation. It's, you know, it's a ladies' thing. So men shouldn't be in there. Guy in gynecology.
It's in mental, though, isn't it?
It's in menswear, yes. It belongs there.
I said it's in mental.
Oh, sorry. Well, we could list all the things it's in. There's his in hysterectomy as well. Why are we getting involved in all these things?
It's men in hymen as well, which is a bit worrying.
Yeah. It's all over the shop. I mean, men are just trying to bully their way into everything.
Meningitis.
Yep.
There even been to Jaitis. Oh,
it was the news that scientists led by British Professor Roger Gosden had successfully reversed the menopause for the first time, meaning much older women will be able to have babies. Professor Gosden said he was sure the public would react well to pregnant 50 and 60-year-olds, as it'll make a nice change from 12 and 13-year-olds. One sexually active 55-year-old said she doubted she'd ever hear the pitter-patter of tiny feet, as her NHS hearing aid packed up years ago. 2 points to Jeremy. Alan, which profession was told to put their house in order?
Oh, I know this. It's the estate agents.
Yes.
There's fearful rat bags out there. There is a government body, bugger off piss or something like that, that wants estate agents to tell the truth. And they're going to attempt to monitor this. And I think it's been going on for some time, actually. Which is how I bought my house in Cricklewood. I was looking for a house in Hampstead. And they said that's where it was. And it's only after we bought it, and I walked to the end of the road, a big sign said Cricklewood. According to estate agents, Hampstead starts at about Cheltenham and goes down to just outside Dover. It's where is it? Oh, it's sort of Hampstead on the Wold, or Lesser Hampstead without. I think it's changed now. It's Notting Hill, isn't it? The whole of England is Notting Hill. A couple of bits near Runcorn that aren't, but you go into any estate agent. Is it near Notting Hill? Absolutely. It's called Leicester, but you can't turn right at the roundabout. Before you know it, there's Hugh Grant gobbling something.
Do you remember an estate? I don't know if they're still in business, called Roy Brooks. Do you remember the original?
You tell the truth.
Yeah, it used to say, dreadful dump. Only suitable for a madman. and did very well, didn't he?
About where you live?
In estate agent speak, East Timor would be Totnes Village.
Fashionably, East Timor would probably do.
So the scores at the end of round two are Andy and Tony with 8, but Alan and Jeremy having excitingly caught up with 8 points too. And with the caravan still to play for, we start round three with a cutting from the Chroma Courier.
Friday, November the 26th. Raymond Froggatt. Tickets £14. On sale now. Book early to avoid.
Thanks to the many of you who spotted that. Andy, who's been queuing up to Dome Down?
Oh, right. Tony's written the word electricians here, which is either the news story or a reminder to himself when he gets home. Is this... There's an industrial dispute, is that
it's
it?
It's nothing to do with electricians.
It's to do with the dome, though. It's to do with the millennium.
Oh, well done.
Yeah, well...
I do actually need to get some electricians in. I'm sorry. Sorry that you read that.
Let's start again. This is to do with the Millennium Dome, the world's most expensive conversation piece, and they were... I don't quite understand why they're doming down, but they were trailing it this week, and it sounds very attractive. Did you know it is the world's largest covered space? I mean, if that doesn't get people along, I don't know what will, frankly.
I'd just like to say at this stage that some electricians did go on strike earlier in the week, and they were working at the Millennium Dome. Therefore, they were relevant, and I'd like an extra point because I really want that caravan.
It's all going to be virtual reality in the dome, isn't it? So you go in and you go into this high-tech thing and you put this little helmet on and put your hand in this mitt and you sort of actually almost can imagine that you're having a fun day out.
You've got to get into that very large womb and you have to wear hard hats. I don't know what falls off wombs. It's all got polyps or something.
What's
you get a bloke from Leeds to come down and sort it out. And the only thing from the mail is an elbow. It's just a womb and an elbow. I mean, it hardly sums up the human race now how it got to Greenwich, does it? Very tempting to just snip one guy rope and the whole thing would go and whiz all over London going until it's gone. I love it. Cherish that.
Is it fabric then, the roof?
Well, that's what they say.
Well, you'll be able to cut it open with a Stanley knife and nick the radio then, won't you? We get 2 points.
Oh, we got 2 points for that.
Despite much mockery in the media, tickets for day one of the exhibition at the Dome sold out in the morning, not quite beating the record for selling out, which Tony Blair established in 10 minutes after he'd entered Downing Street. Recently confirmed the Dome would have a space for private prayer. A new Labour apparatchik said it was good the exhibition would have room for people to submit entreaties to the Lord, though whether Mr Blair will be able to answer each of them personally remains in doubt. Tony, listen to this music. Tony, which royal sport watcher might not be going to court?
Well, this is the huge story of the week. The chairman of the All England Club, John Curry, I don't know how he got that position. He was a very good ice skater, but I don't know. Surely, you know, more knowledge of tennis would be handy. He wrote a letter to the Duchess of Kent telling her that she could no longer bring 12-year-old boys into the royal box at Wimbledon. Quite rightly, I mean, heaven forfend, we don't want young people getting interested in tennis, do we? And she's upset about this, the Duchess of Kent. She says, and she's going to start... Well, she said she threatened to boycott the royal box, which is something I've been doing for years.
How did they know the child wasn't royal? I mean, there's loads of... I mean, what do they count its toes or make it sit an exam and it passed? So they said, well, this one can't be a royal. They're horrified. We can't have ordinary children in the box with their begging bowls and their chimney brushes. They'll be wanting to run on the court and pick up the stray balls like all those orphans.
No, let's get the people. Let's have a people's box. Let's not have a royal box. What do you think?
Cliff Richard's box. Don't even go there.
Jeremy, which young chorister has had the BBC going ape?
Tarzan.
Mm. Is it? Mm. Not that little Welsh boy. He must have grown up, surely.
kid called Johnny something was brought up by apes and is now employed by the BBC.
Right. Weissmuller.
What?
Weissmuller. Johnny Weissmuller.
Yes. He's brought up by chimpanzees and then got a job at the BBC. Director General, probably. No, he's going to sing. He now sings. He's got a good voice.
Right.
Can you be more specific at all?
What do you mean more specific?
Narrowed it down boy to... Boy who was brought,
up,
brought
by
up by
chimpanzees. It's a bit general, that. Johnny the chimpanzee
I don't care,
boy.
I'm sorry.
That could be any number of people.
It was in Uganda, I think, that it happened.
Yeah, well, you're not going to get a point. I'm just cross. Chorister John Sabunia, a Ugandan boy raised for 4 years by chimpanzees, is to star in a new BBC documentary, Changing Trees. The young John lived survived on a meagre diet of fruit, nuts and berries, though where the chimps got boxes of Alpen, goodness knows. So 2 points to Jeremy's side. Oh, 2 points to Jeremy.
They're bloody grudging.
2 points to Alan. And the scores at the end of round three are, excitingly, Andy and Tony with 12, but Alan and Jeremy now in the lead with 13 points. Andy, your piece of music. She is free to be what she wants to be. All she wants to be is a modern girl. Na, 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 na. Andy, who pierced Cheltenham's state image?
I'm sorry, but Tony has just written electricians again. Sold me a complete dummy. I thought, I'm all right here. Tony knows the answer. I wasn't even listening to the question then.
Who pierced Cheltenham's staid image?
Just say that, if you can read it. I'll write it.
Naomi Jones.
Yes.
Correct. Well, 2 points. Right. I think Tony knows the answer,
doesn't
he, Tony?
She's a pierced person, isn't she?
Yes, you know that. Yes, she's this girl, I think, who... Cheltenham Borough Council or something. They wanted to get a harder image to try and get people to vote, I think. So they had, and they decided to use a picture of this girl, who's called Naomi Jo, which seems a bit, you know, greedy to have two names. You just go for one. But she's also greedy. She's got studs in her tongue, in her cheek, in her chin, in her nose, in her lips, in her eyebrow, and probably her womb and her elbow as well. Everywhere. But I think it's caused, obviously, in a place like Cheltenham, where they have Cheltenham Ladies' College and all that, caused a bit of an outcry, I think. I like that there was a comment by the headmistress of the Ladies' College. She's called Victoria Tuck. I didn't know whether that was her name or just Cockney rhyming slang. But they don't allow it at the Ladies' College, apparently, the piercing and the studs and everything. I think they're horrible. I really do. Do you know?
19-year-old Naomi Jo Hughes, a shop assistant with several facial piercings, has been chosen by the local council to be a symbol of Cheltenham's newfound youth and vitality after Thora Heard turned the job down. She moved to Cheltenham from Devon after separating from her boyfriend in an operation that took doctors 2.5 hours. 2 points to Tony. Jeremy, why was the red-crowned crane music to ancient ears?
Either Alan's just turned into a loyalist and that's why he's making flute signs.
Close.
Like Gaza, or it's something else to do with flutes. It's to do with flutes. 2 points. What is it?
Chinese flutes.
Chinese flutes.
They've dug up the world's oldest musical instrument. It's 9,000 years old.
Bloody hell. Might be a firework. They had lots of fireworks for Chinese, you know.
It's the only thing you know about the Chinese.
Chinese invented fireworks. I know that. Most people think that fireworks were invented by Lord Firework at the Battle of Weddington. Who said, bring me a boot with some meat and bread inside it.
We could all be wearing sandwiches and eating cardigans if it's one slightly different. Anyway, it's the flute.
It is. Scientists in China have discovered 6 9,000-year-old flutes carved from the wing bones of the red-crowned crane. Scientists were thrilled to discover the bone flute. All they now need is a pink oboe and a nice pair of bongos, and they'll have a full set of double entendres. Alan, the last question. Who pleaded, don't touch me in the morning?
This is Diana Ross, who felt a bit of a tit at Heathrow. But it wasn't her. Somebody already felt her, so she allegedly lashed out and floored this security person. You ever been that woman Naomi Jo going through with all those studs? Yeah. Amazing. Planes would have come down. But she apparently the thing she was wearing a silver belt, and the alarm went off, and they said, "Come over here and let us feed you all over." And that was it.
I feel a bit sorry for the female security operative because, I mean, we weren't there, we don't know what happened, but surely a question of whether what she did was appropriate. For instance, if Miss Ross was setting off the metal detector and she thought it might be a bit of metal around her breast, then it seems to me appropriate to touch her on the breast. If, on the other hand, she was just bored and grabbed them and went honk honk, then and that...
I've had that experience going through, as most men have, and, you know, carefully dressed to the left to avoid all that. They're clearly looking for a gun. It'd be very unsettling if they found it, because they wouldn't be certain immediately.
Not a boast many of us could make.
I'm sorry to hear that, Simon.
Strapped to your ankle, is it, Alan? Yes.
Asked to describe how she felt, the security guard involved said, well, not bad for a woman of 55. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Right, well, this has been sent in by Stuart Smith, who lives on the wonderfully named Windy Ridge near Wigan. The race is on to become the first cyclist to cross the English Channel using pedal power. Scott Bonnard, the British contestant, is hoping he will be the one to achieve the feat, but a rival Italian team plans to push him all the way.
Tony.
This has been sent in by Claire Bradley from Plymouth, and it's from the Daily Telegraph Television and Radio Guide. 10:55, more real Monty. An update on the troupe of male strippers who formed to cash in on the blockbuster movie. The boys prepare for a gig in Benidorm, but first have to recruit two new members.
Jeremy.
This is sent in by Diana and John Martin from Carlisle, and it's from the Cumberland News. Carlisle shrubberist Lisa Goble will put her best foot forward for a good cause later this year by walking along a 70-mile stretch along the ancient Great Wall of China. It's certainly going to be a challenge, said Miss Goble, 32. I've been told there are parts of the wall which are nearly vertical.
Alan.
From the Independent, Simon. This Pete Huynes, 37, an angler from Gothenburg, Sweden, was taken to court for spanking his wife with a live eel. Court found him guilty and fined him £100 for cruelty to the eel.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final score. Andy and Tony have 16 points, but Alan and Jeremy have soared to victory with 17 points. Let me leave you with an item seen in The Guardian by George Bennison of Malvern.
During the reindeer season, we take the convicts out hunting. Even the murderers, said Turba Thru, head of the correctional institution in Nuuk. Obviously, we don't take the mentally unstable, he said. They get to go fishing.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Andy Hamilton, Jeremy Hardy and Tony Hawkes. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Corrie Caulfield. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.